The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to the Banned Book Breakdown, a podcast that delves into the world of censored literature, where we will review and draw attention to the stories of authors who the government has tried to silence. I'm your host, DJ Blue, and remember, literature unites us, censorship divides us. Let's review banned books. In today's episode, I'll be interviewing two high school teachers that teach English at Los Osos High School. Christy Lemons has a Master's of Arts in Teaching and has been a classroom teacher for 13 years. She is also currently the Los Osos English Department Chair. Lori Villasenor has a Master's of Arts in Education as well and has spent 28 years as an English teacher. She is currently at Los Osos High School. And they are both AP Lang teachers. Okay, so my first question for you is something that I talk about quite a bit on my podcast is how important it is that young readers are able to see different perspectives and that they're able to do this through literature where, you know, you kind of get to see through the lenses of so many different kinds of people that look different and experience the world differently. And so I was just wondering if you can give your opinion as an educator on this idea of getting to see different points of views.
Yeah, I think that's like the beauty of literature, right? People have been writing since we could put pen to paper, right? And so there's so many perspectives out there, and it's really critical for people, kids, especially teenagers who, you know, live in a more sheltered environment to see how other people live and what those experiences can look like with simple changes in privilege, even, right? Literature is truly like a vehicle to see into other people's experiences. So it's like critical that we're constantly seeking ways to broaden kids' perspectives through literature.
And then I guess kind of on like the opposite side of that, like also I have talked a lot about the importance of being able to see yourself represented. And I know it's something that gets talked about a lot in like media as well, about getting to see someone that looks like you or that has lived a life like you. And so I guess my next question is just kind of your opinion on representation in literature and how banning books kind of dims it.
Yeah, I mean, the books that are being banned, it's very clear that their voices are challenging the status quo, and those voices tend to be LGBTQ writers sharing about their experiences, as well as, you know, Black and other people of color. Those have been the top groups getting their books banned across the country. So it's very clear that those stories are seen as threatening in some way, that giving kids exposure to completely different lifestyles that may or may not be similar to their own is threatening. But it's also incredible to give kids that opportunity to see themselves in different ways. I think it's really, really valuable to be able to open a book and know that you are the clientele, right?
Yeah.
That these characters are similar to you in a way that you've maybe never been seen or heard in like your daily life, but something that character even experiences speaks to you and your experiences. And that's not always like a cultural thing. It's not always like race or gender. Oftentimes it is, but it's not always that way. It's like a diversity of expression is what we lose when we're censoring books. And I think that diversity of expression allows all types of people to connect and see themselves in the literature. And that's so important just to know, like, you're not alone in this world. Like James Baldwin has a quote that's, I'm going to summarize it like very poorly, but he says something to the effect of like, you think you're suffering alone until you read Dostoevsky, right?
Yeah.
Or like you read someone who captures your emotions in a way that like resonates so closely to you.
Right.
So there's so many bridges that allow you to connect. Even if it's not culturally, you can still see yourself in those emotions. And I think that opens us up to like a universal experience of literature, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't, while I do think it's incredibly important for our books to depict culture, because that is another inroad, right? To connection. I do think that when books are written authentically by the author, there's an inroad for a lot of different types of people to connect in addition to cultural connection.
Yeah.
Well, obviously that's part of the reason why we teach the different types of literature that we do. And it's part of the reason I've been a reader as long as I have, is because in many ways, especially when you don't have money, it's one of the best ways to explore the world and to discover people that are different from you, who have different customs and traditions than we do. And so I feel like that's at the heart of what reading does. But you also, I love the control that you have as a reader versus if you were viewing a film or a TV show and they're showing you a limited perspective, or their perspective, whoever's directing it, if you will. And so I like that about books, is that books aren't meant to, you know, tell you what to think. It opens the door for a conversation. Actually, it could, if you guys want to talk about this particular quote, I think it's probably the most relevant now, and it goes to the heart of what we see going on with book banning. And so, especially because with teaching English, Lemons and I are notorious for constantly bringing in history. Mm-hmm. Kids can't have the literature without the history. And with the way things are with history right now, there's two things that every time I come across this quote or think about this quote, it's really powerful. So it says, it takes one desperate generation to change history, even erase it. But it was amended with one generation changes the text. One generation chooses to teach that text. The next grows and the lie becomes history. And that's what scares me more than anything.
Yeah.
So, especially right now, I have my kids reading, doing research on the background for To Kill a Mockingbird, which spans multiple time periods. And as they're looking at, like, for example, the kids are like, what's the Green Book? I was like, you need to do your research and you need to find that out.
Yeah.
Because these are things that they're not going to hear about in history. I mean, luckily there was a movie about it, but it still doesn't touch the same on the same level.
I was just actually wondering, like, the statistics, like, that you had mentioned, like, what those are kind of about.
Yeah. Well, okay, so one of the things that it does say as far as how often books are challenged and specifically where they're challenged, and this was last year, 76% of the books, or things that were challenged, I should say, 76% of challenges were for books and graphic novels, and then you break them down even further. While it doesn't feel like it's overwhelming at schools, I mean, we feel it on the front lines, but when you look at the statistics, and because it's nationwide, it doesn't seem as extensive. But for the classroom or for schools, it's about 3%. But then the school libraries receive a bigger challenge, because kids get to choose those versus like the ones that are read as a whole group.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, especially
includes elementary school.
Yeah.
I don't think that Lemons and I have seen the extent of this kind of challenge for city libraries. That's probably the most alarming because it is a state of democracy. It is a level playing field for everybody to have access to be able to read because it doesn't require you to pay for anything. You just get a library card. And I think that while we can get tons of information online, especially old books, you can get tons of PDFs for that.
Yeah.
It's for what kids want to read now, for what kids want to see about the life that they're currently living in and the commentary about the life they're living in. When that's being denied and you don't have that access, it's very frustrating. I just know while we're kind of a high-profile school, and I think, I don't know if Lemons would agree with this, I just, it was something that popped up. Somebody had said this to me, that our community is becoming more and more religious-based. I know. Julia had said it. Julia said the number of kids who have gone to private colleges that are Christian or has Christian leanings. She says, I cannot believe the number of kids that I know that I was in school with that I didn't realize were that religious.
Yeah.
And she says, I didn't realize our community was so dedicated in that way. And I feel like it is definitely more than what we've ever seen. And I've been at the school for 23 years. So I don't know, Lemons, what you think?
I mean, I guess maybe in a more outward sense, like, I think we have two, like, Jesus-y clubs on campus. And the kids are certainly, like, I think more prideful about their religion in a way that maybe didn't exist or I wasn't aware of when I first started. But I have noticed that there seems to be more of an awareness, like an outward, I guess, push for people to know what your faith is if you're a Christian. I would say maybe that's the case. Not that kids weren't going to church or prescribing to a religion before, but I think they're just more, I don't know if that means that there is the rise, but they're certainly more vocal about.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So maybe not that there's more, but they're more vocal in that vocalizing of their Christian faith has been spilling over into the choices, or their resistance to being exposed to books that are different than their traditional beliefs.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the basis of a lot of the book challenges that we have is either a very conservative stance or a very Christian, a traditional Christian stance. You know, I tell the parents, because I sit in on these meetings, I tell the parents, you know, I went to Christian school from preschool to sixth grade. You know, I was in choir. I was in, you know, I did all the things. I was in all the Jesus plays, the Christmas time. You know, I did all of that. I went to church throughout my 20s on my own, you know. And there's nothing in a book that is going to harm your child. It oftentimes, like, it'll be some of our even, like, Christian teachers who have been called horrendous things that are so laughable, you know, because you're like, this person is in church every Sunday. They are, you know, if you're going to have a problem with anyone, you're just looking for a problem is what I've surmised. Yeah. But regardless of whatever our teacher's religion is, we're not in the business of reading pornography. You know what I mean? Like, And that's what some of these people, they think, oh my God, there's a gay character. They're trying to turn my child gay.
Yeah.
And it's like, can you be real? Like for a minute, but they're so far off the deep end that it's really hard to have those conversations, but it is more powerful to have them in person because it's easier for people to formulate things that they want to say negatively in text. Mm-hmm. It's they're very hard. It's not easy for them to say that to your face.
Right.
Well, and part of, I think, what built things in the direction that we're in is that in 2020, when we all had to shelter in place, it created a bigger bubble for everybody than they were already in with their social media. It amplified. And so they're not going to school with people that are different from them. They're isolated within their homes with people who have like-minded views. And so it just... they kind of spiraled in these particular bubbles for a while. And so once they were back in school, then all of a sudden this weird shock seemed to settle over families, specifically parents who were adverse to certain ideas or certain other people's experiences that they just didn't want their kids to be exposed to because they got really comfortable keeping things just within their family, yeah. Right? And now they're back in the world. And so that's when all those book challenges started to happen. And it's almost laughable that we keep going through these periods, but keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. We've been through the censorship. We've been through the book bans. And it's these little hurdles that we face in the pendulum swings and whatever you want to call it. And it's just that we're in knee deep in it. It's just the question is, how far is it going to go? And that's why I brought up the comment about history. When you've got people that want to pretend things didn't happen, mm-hmm. and that's the most dangerous that I think we've ever seen it. And just when we're starting, somebody said, I think it was Ta-Nehisi Coates said, you know, we take these steps forward, but then we end up getting pushed back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's this shuffle all the time. And one of my favorite quotes from him is he talks about, you've got to keep pushing on that window. You've got to keep pushing, because when that window finally opens, if you're not there to push, nothing's going to go through. And so that's kind of what I'm seeing here is that every time we've made some progress, it's groups that get scared, they get in this mindset that somehow they're going to lose power over what I don't know. I guess control over the narrative. And that's the thing is that the narrative has been a specific way for a very long time. And the truth has been coming in by degrees. And as the truth has been coming out about history, about situations that have happened, that now people are going, oh, no, we can't reveal these things. It's as the number of people that talked about the Tulsa, Oklahoma, going, I didn't know about that. You know, just the number of these kinds of situations, because they're not taught, because they've been hushed up, because they've been not included in specific classes or in history or in specific exposure from books, whatever it is. So that's what I think is happening is that the more and more people that are being published and being able to create a voice and being able to tell a narrative, that's when people are freaking out.
Yeah.
The importance of young adult readers to have access to these books that are being banned, which I guess kind of goes back to, you know, the idea of seeing different perspectives and seeing, you know, something other than just what you think is realistic. Because one of the things that I also had mentioned a lot in my podcast is that people, a lot of times the people that are challenging these books are trying to say like, oh, that's not realistic. That would never happen. Like specifically with one of my favorite books called Rumble, where it kind of deals with a main character who's struggling with his faith and struggling because his younger brother committed suicide because he was gay and dealt with bullying from the Christian community because of that. And a lot of backlash that I saw from that book was saying like, oh, that's not realistic. Like that wouldn't happen. And it's just, yeah. And so I think that's like one of the things that I feel like I've noticed a lot is like this idea of like, that's not realistic, but that's not realistic because that's not what you have to deal with. And so I guess I just wanted to see what you guys kind of thought about that or if you've seen anything similar.
I mean, it's, you could ask, that argument could work against any book for any reason. Like, we could talk about Romeo and Juliet, which is, like, my favorite book to reference when I go to parent meetings. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Romeo and Juliet has everything. It has child marriage. It has disobedience. It has suicide. It has murder. It has everything, but never have we said that is an inappropriate text or that is, it's so unrealistic that we shouldn't even be teaching it.
Yeah.
Right. Never have we questioned the literary merit of that text because there's some really heavy life and death choices made throughout the text, you know, and those are just the big things, not even the small things. Right. Yeah. I just think it's laughable. Obviously, it's like it's not ha-ha, it's funny weird more. Like, it just sucks because people are saying it's not realistic, and it's like, okay, so you want it to be very realistic? How realistic would you like? Because I can pull a book that has some of our headlines today. I can write you a fiction book, and you would still complain about it.
Yeah.
So what is really the problem? And when you get down to the real problem, it is people are uncomfortable with queer stories, Black stories, and stories from other people of color. They're uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Well, and it's funny that you mentioned this is a Christian group talking about what's unrealistic. and we could talk about all the things in the Bible.
Yeah,
truly.
And the number of things in the Bible that are dark. And
so dark.
And but again, it's this sugarcoating of everything so that that is consumable, you know, rather than dealing with the realities of what some of these stories are really talking about, which are really dark, and they're meant to be moral lessons, not to be taken verbatim. Mm-hmm. And then you have the stories that we're talking about that the kids are reading. The whole point of reading the story is to learn to be a person who's empathetic. Yes, it's to discover the world out there outside of yourself. Yes, it's also to be able to see characters that are reflective of you, so you have representation. But more than anything, learn to be a human.
Yeah.
We want you to learn the human condition by looking at what these people are experiencing, what they're going through, so that you can understand to have that empathy for someone else, to see that someone else is struggling. You're not the only one. We all struggle in our own ways, and we need to be I don't want to say sensitive, but we need to be open and receptive.
Open,
to other people's plights.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.